coupled with finitely generated fundamental group with given ending lamination data and topological type. So the story starts with two short papers published in 1973 by Peter Scott. And these concern simply a three-manifold with fundamental group gamma, which is finitely generated. And what he proved was that gamma is finitely presented. And in the second paper, he showed that there is a compact manifold contained in N such that this is homotopy equivalence. And this theorem implies the first because a compact manifold with boundary automatically has a finitely presented fundamental group. And so this has become known as the Scott call. It's unique up to homeomorphism, but not up to ambient isotopy. So what's usually used if N is hyperbolic, and therefore a quotient of hyperbolic free space by its covering group, then what's usually used is a relative version of this result. So ND is, I use ND, holospherical deletion. So this is obtained by taking out neighborhoods of the cusps in the manifold, of which there are finitely many by a result of Sullivan. And then the result, the relative result, becomes that if you take N, D, and the holospherical boundary, well, that's ND, is homotopy equivalent to NC, I'll just call it NC. So this is called the relative Scott call. And again, so it's now a compact submanifold with boundary of ND, and it is homotopy equivalent. Now, given this setup, one can then investigate the components of ND minus NC. And each one is a, each component, UE, is a neighborhood of unique end of ND. So, now, these ends come in two types, geometrically finite and geometrically infinite. Geometrically finite or infinite. So the geometrically finite ends are ones where the they don't intersect. They can be, they, well, at least you can choose the relative Scott call so that they don't intersect the convex hull of the manifold at all. And in this case, they are just topologically. So UE is always, in fact, homotopy equivalent to SE, a surface SE cross R. Well, since I've got it in the end of ND, that would be SD, this deletion of a finite type surface SE. And now that Taylor's conjecture has been proved, then that they are known to be topologically homeomorphic. They're homeomorphic to these. But anyway, so this was this is known for a long time for the geometrically finite ends. Thurston started a classification of geometrically infinite ends. So the geometrically infinite ends are the ones for which the convex core does intersect U of E, however small a neighborhood you take. And Thurston then, the classification of some data associated to geometrically infinite ends was then treated by Bonneton and Canary, so key papers in 1986 and 1993, respectively. And so there is this concept of was originally called a simply degenerate end. If UE is what's called a tame end, this is actually Canary's result, which came later. If UE is a topologically tame end, then can define an ending invariant. Mu of E. Now, if you include the geometrically finite ends, then this is either a point in the Teichmann space of S of E, or it's a geodesic lamination on S of E. So this is Teichmann space. This is geodesic laminations which are minimal with full support on the surface. So such laminations are called by people working in hyperbolic geometry as irrational. So that's where I put A. So, Canary was built on earlier work by Bonneton, which actually showed that. Bonneton actually proved that this was true for all geometrically infinite ends. In particular, proved when the fundamental group of the hyperbolic 3 manifold is isomorphic to a surface group. So he showed that the hypotheses that you need for this work in any such situation, and more generally. What Bonneton also proved is that for each end there exists a sequence of simple closed geodesics gamma n which such that gamma n is contained in any U of E for all large n. Well, gamma n tends to the end. And also in the Hausdorff topology, gamma n tends to mu of E. So this is for geometrically infinite n, I should say. So geometrically infinite. Which is this lamination, this irrational geodesic lamination on S of E. He had some assumption on the fundamental group, which included this. Yes, but incompressible in ND. relatively inconfessible. So if you take NC, okay, it's a compact manifold with boundary, and the boundary components are surfaces, and each surface fronts a unique end of the manifold. So this is basically the definition of geometrically tame. What Canary showed was that topologically tame implied geometrically tame. And then in 2004, Egel and Caligari and Gabay gave proof that for any hyperbolic free manifold with finitely generated fundamental group, N is topologically tame. So this was something that was already known to be true in Bonaton's case under those conditions on the fundamental group. So the... It is. Indeed, yes, it is. Yes, I didn't define it. It's also equivalent to each end being topologically a product. So ELC, the ending laminations conjecture says that N is uniquely determined up to isometry by its ending invariance. Now, strictly speaking, so you have, basically you have an ending invariant for each end, but you have to quotient out by, in the general case, you actually have to quotient out by a group of homeomorphisms, a certain group of homeomorphisms of the, a certain group of the modular group of the core. But anyway, so basically it's an ending invariant for each end. So it's unique to its like ending invariance, which is an end tuple basically, and its topological type. And the topological type of NC.
The existence part of which ending laminations can ending invariant here was already done by Bonaton.
Sorry, the existence. The existence of a hyperbolic manifold corresponding to each end invariant, I'll say something about that later. There was certainly something known about that by Thurston and a lot of work by Ushika, but for a complete answer, I think that's fairly recent. This became Minsky's project, and over a period of 10 to 15 years, he proved a number of special cases, and the most striking was the punctured torus case. Which was published in 1999, but I think was being presented from about 1994. I heard it presented in 1995. And the striking thing about this is that, well, it was the first time that there had been a proof obtained in a case when N had unbounded geometry. But also it's striking because of the geometric model which is presented, which is very, very nice. It's based on the fairy graph of the torus, and there are very precise estimates on the in terms of the combinatorial data on the geometry of Margulis tubes in the manifold. So that was the case that is also historically extremely interested is the bounded geometry case, on which Minsky published a number of papers, but I think basically there were two 1993, so one of his earliest papers on the subject, and 2001. Now, of course, it's not clear from the publication dates exactly how long the work on this case took, but it is significant because in his first proof, so combinatorial bounded geometry could mean two things. The first paper was actually proved under the assumption of bounded geometry on the hyperbolic manifold. And the final result just assumes combinatorial bounded geometry and deduces bounded geometry of the hyperbolic manifold from that. That came much later, and by which time he was developing a lot of machinery. So then the main result... I'll talk about the equivalent conditions in a minute. But anyway, the Kleinian surface case... So this is when the case treated, in particular by Bonneton, when the fundamental group is isomorphic to a surface group. So a proof of this was announced in 2002, and this work is actually joint with Brock and Canary for the last part, and was appeared... The preprint appeared in 2004, and then the general case was announced in 2003. So, I started to think in about 2000 that work that I was doing to do with complex dynamics, but nothing to do with MLC, in fact, on Teichmuller geometry might be relevant to this problem. And in 2001, I formulated a program to prove ELC using this, and I then produced a preprint on the Kleinian surface case. So in 2004, and this preprint then I put in as version 2 in the archive in 2005. And then this actually does include some results on existence of ending laminations in the general case. That seems to be something that the Munsky-Brock and Canary result version does not have, although it's not yet available. And there is another version, at least in the incompressible boundary case, and possibly more general, I haven't actually checked, who produced a preprint on in 2005. He certainly thinks he can do more than just the case of incompressible boundary. So, Minsky's strategy, I think, is used by all versions. His general strategy is used by all versions of proof of ELC. So the general strategy is, so given mu1 to mu n. Well, square brackets maybe. So construct a model manifold. A model Riemannian manifold. M mu1 to mu n. So, and this is to be the model up to Lipschitz equivalence. So then if Ni is a hyperbolic manifold, with ending data, mu1 to mu n, construct a Lipschitz by Lipschitz map phi sub I from m, well, I'll just call this m, to ni. Well, actually, there is a variant of this which is used by me and also by Bowditch. Just do it on the universal cover for the by-lectures part. Now, the universal cover of the hyperbolic manifold, of course, is just 8-3. Then, so then look at phi, let's see, which way do you want to do it? So phi 2 tilde composed with phi 1 tilde from H3 to H3 is, or course by Lipschitz. It doesn't have to be injective. It just has to be such that distances, large distances, are comparable. So then this map extends, because it's by Lipschitz, or course by Lipschitz, extends to quasi-conformal map. This, of course, is exactly the strategy that's used in the in Mostow's theorem and also in the geometrically finite case, so it's not a new strategy. So it's a quasi-conformal map between the boundaries. And from this, we get gamma 1, or is it gamma 2 invariant? One or the other, well, both probably. Gamma 1 invariant line field on the boundary, and Sullivan says that this is impossible. So there's a result of Sullivan, for which I even have the date here somewhere. So Sullivan shows that there is no invariant line field under a finitely generated Kleinian group on the boundary of hyperbolic free space. So, this would exist if the two manifolds were not isometric. So, therefore, any two such manifolds are isometric. Now, so that is the general strategy. Now, what I want to do is to describe outline a proof of this result in the combinatorial bounded geometry case. And so this proof has as its inputs some results that Minsky produced in his second paper, his 2001 paper on the combinatorial bounded geometry case, which are very strong results, and they don't just apply to manifolds of bounded geometry. And, well, he didn't use them, and he didn't use those results quite in the way that I would have expected. And so this is a way that he could have proved the theorem, but in fact didn't. He was also using work that he had done earlier. So I want to look at the combinatorial bounded geometry case. So what does this mean? So I'm going to stick to the case, which is what has been done historically. So when the hyperbolic manifold in question is homotopy equivalent and therefore homeomorphic by Bonaton's work to a surface cross R, and I'll stick to the case where the two ends are geometrically infinite. So with two irrational geodesic laminations on the surface. Now, the combinatorial bounded geometry condition has two formulations that I like to use. So condition one, now these are going to be equivalent. So condition one is that for all simple non-trivial, non-peripheral gamma contained in F, so there's something called intersection number, which I don't want to define, but it's used in a lot of branches of dynamics, so a lot of people will know what it is. It's a positive number, and it measures basically it is going to be greater than or equal to a constant, depending on mu, but independent of gamma, over mod gamma. Now, I'm using mod gamma for length with respect to some fixed metric on the surface. So, length with respect to some fixed metric. So, that's condition one. Now maybe I'd better just produce. So what is my notation for Tychler space? Is equivalence classes of a homeomorphism. So phi, where phi from S to phi of S is an orientation preserving homeomorphism. Now S is a fixed topological surface. Phi of S is a surface with a hyperbolic structure, or a Riemann surface, whichever you prefer. And the square brackets denotes isotopy and also composition, left composition by an isometry. So condition two, which is equivalent to condition one, is that there exists gamma n tending to mu, and phi n contain in the Tychler space, such that for some fixed n, this is so fixed for fixed for some fixed n, such that phi n of gamma n is less than or equal to m. And if you look at if you fix phi naught, then phi, the geodesic in, so this is the geodesic in Tychler space. This is contained in the thick part of Tychler space. So the thick part of Tychler space is equal to nu mu. So this is a fixed constant. This is a set of all psi such that psi of gamma is greater than or equal to mu of mu for all gamma contained in S. Yeah. So let's see. So this is a constant greater than zero, which. What does this mean? To mu. Yep. What does that mean? It means convergence, for instance, in the Hausdorff topology. So I'm saying, at the moment, I'm just putting a condition on a lamination. There are two conditions on a lamination which are equivalent. One is that the intersection with any loop gamma should be greater than or equal to a constant over the length of gamma. Right? That's one condition just on a geodesic lamination. It depends on knowing what the intersection of a geodesic of a lamination with a loop means. But you can make sense of that. What is? It's a geodesic lamination on the. It could be an ending lamination. This is just a condition on a lamination. Right. Yes. Yes, equivalent to that in the torus case. Yes. In fact, it looks like it, right? It looks like it. So, So this is just a condition on this, by the way, is my notation for the length. If I write that this, it's supposed to be, if I write psi of gamma, this means taking the geodesic on the surface psi of f, homotopic to gamma, and this is length in psi of f. It's not, I hope the notation is, if I put psi of gamma, that means a curve, a loop on the surface psi of f. So I think of a point in time and a space being a function. The range of the function is included in the data, and that is a surface which has got a hyperbolic structure on it. Yes, what is it? Sorry, for all n. So if you take the geodesic from a fixed base point to phi of n, then this is including this. And what this, if you, so what is combinatorial bounded geometry for a manifold? So if mu plus or minus satisfy condition one, that's combinatorial bounded one. That's combinatorial bounded geometry. That is combinatorial bounded geometry. Then phi n plus or minus converge to. So then you have gamma n plus or minus converging to mu plus or minus. And it's actually can obtain some condition two for each. You can choose these so that this should be written like that. So that the geodesic between points in Tychonoff space converging to the ending lamination contained in the thick part of Tychonoff space. So this is combinatorial bounded geometry. The first condition, by the way, is possibly more familiar. Dynamicists often look at geodesic laminations, and that actually tells you something about the dynamics of the geodesic lamination, which is in fact important. There is a relation between the dynamics of individual geodesic laminations and dynamics of the type of geodesic in type of space. Right. What you can say is that if that condition is satisfied for all loops gamma, then what the lamination does is it never spends too much time disjoint from gamma. Ever. It never spends a lot of time just winding around gamma or just being disjoint from it. It's an important property for any loop gamma. So the next thing I want to do is to produce a model for the a model manifold in the case of combinatorial bounded geometry. Now everybody uses this model essentially in the case of combinatorial bounded geometry. So there's no controversy about this model. It's used by everybody. So this is actually a model. So I'm going to take a model for. This is a model for, in the geometrically finite case. So take two points in Tychonoff space, and then if for m mu minus mu plus, if these are ending laminations, then take the geometric limit. Of m yn minus yn plus, where yn minus tends to mu minus yn plus tends to amuse us. Now, I haven't actually defined convergence of a sequence entitlement of space to an ending lamination, but it's essentially on the far board phi n brackets tends to mu. Yep.
Just going back, it does unique
or does it? Yes, I meant to say that, in fact, yes, it does. Yes. Unique egoticity is a consequence of that. You can get, in fact, that is. It's not equivalent. No, I was just going to. You can't quite prove. Full measure of unique egoticity from that. But certainly that condition is related to a proof of a full measure of unique egoticity. Right. So this is going to be a geometric model manifold. I haven't defined it yet. Sorry? So this is to be a model for a hyperbolic manifold with that ending lamination data up to a bounded Lipschitz equivalence. That's what it will be. So just topologically, this should be a product. So it should be a product S cross, I'm going to write minus U minus U plus, where U plus minus U minus is the Teichmuller distance between Y minus and Y plus. So in Teichmuller space, there is a unique geodesic between any two points. And so Y minus Y plus, the Teichmuller geodesic is just Y sub T for T between minus U minus U plus, where the distance between the distance in Teichmuller space between YT and YF is modulus of T minus F. And my notation is that YT is the equivalence class of a homeomorphism. Phi T of F, I'm going to write ST, so this is a hyperbolic surface. A hyperbolic surface with metric sigma T, normalized, I suppose, to have area 1. So constant term just whatever it is. Now, phi t, so now we want to put a metric on this product space S cross mu minus mu plus. Choose phi t. So yt is the equivalence class of a homeomorphism. I want to choose phi t. I can choose it to be a diffeomorphism, and such that the norm of the derivative is less than or equal to m with respect to sigma t and sigma s. So I can certainly do that. And then the metric is just phi t star sigma t plus dt squared. So that is a Riemannian metric on S cross minus U minus U plus. And, yes? Yes. 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 The points in Teichmuller space. Each one is, yeah. Yes. So phi t star sigma t is a metric on a fixed surface S. Sigma T is a metric on ST. Phi T star is a metric on S. So this metric, by putting just this condition on, this metric is actually uniquely determined up to Lipschitz equivalence. If I took a different choice here, I would have the same, I would be able to find a homeomorphism between of S cross minus U minus U plus to itself, which would be bounded Lipschitz. So this metric is uniquely determined by this condition up to by Lipschitz. Sorry? That's a bad choice, isn't it? I'd better have C. M is a manifold. Well, you can choose a constant. I don't care what it is. You can certainly choose a constant. So, for T minus S less than or equal to 1. You can't do it universally. But So if T minus S is less than or equal to 1, thank you. Sorry? D, this would be the derivative. Phi T composed of phi S to the minus 1. This maps S to ST. You want it like that? It's not composed. It's just a constant. Oh dear. So they're all C's. This one's totally different. Yes. Yeah. Right. So where are we up to? So then, in order to get a geometric model for mu minus mu plus, it turns out you can just take geometric limits of such things. Whenever you have convergence of y minus yn minus y plus to mu plus minus mu plus, the geometric limit of these will be the same up to Lipschitz equivalence. So that's the geometric model. Now, construction of the Lipschitz map. So Lipschitz first, by Lipschitz second. So phi from M to M. Bonnet on showed, which
so,
I...
So for this to have a geometric limit, we need both conditions?
We're really using condition two. Condition one is a natural one for dynamicists, but really we're using condition two. So, construction of a Lipschitz map. So, Bonneton, in order to... what he actually showed was that there exist pleated surfaces, Fn minus, plus or minus. A pleated surface, for me, is usually... what is a pleated surface? So I gather Minsky talked about these. So pleated surface, I think it's a bit indeterminate what its domain and range are. For me, a pleated surface is a map, is a point in triangular space, usually. So it maps a fixed topological surface to a hyperbolic surface, S of S. I'll call it S of S. But then there are also impressioned or imprint, I'm not sure which, associated to this. There is a map from S to F of S, which is contained in the hyperbolic manifold that you're looking at. And also you can... or you can regard it, so that's how you get S of S. So you a pleated surface, you have this map from S into the hyperbolic manifold, which is geodesic, it's isometric on the complement of a lamination, and then you can use this to describe a hyperbolic surface S of F. And so you can also regard F as a map from S of F into S of F, which is isometric on the complement of a lamination and a distance decreasing with respect to the metric on N globally. So there are pleated surfaces Fn plus or minus contained in Tau S, where Fn, so Fn plus of S tends to plus infinity, I suppose, and that one of the n's, and Fn minus S tends to minus infinity. So these, the images are contained in neighborhoods of any neighborhood of the end. And in fact, so the hard work was to show that as points in Tychonoff space, will these converge to the ends, to the geodesic laminations. And in fact, the pleating loci of these pleated surfaces can be taken to be closed loops, which form a pair of Pounce decomposition of the surface together with some infinite leaves just to triangulate each of the pairs of paths. Now, well, I suppose I should go to here. So then, what can you do? You can, so there exists Fn minus, well, there is points in Tychonoff space. Such that, since we're in the combinatorial bounded geometry case, Yn minus Yn plus, this is contained in the thick part of the surface of the Tychonoff space, and if you look at the geodesic Fn minus to Fn plus, so these are 2 points in Tychonoff space, this comes within a bounded distance. Of every point on yn minus yn plus. So this is in some sense longer than this. And so we can also choose the pleating locus of Fn minus Fn plus to be gamma n plus minus, so a loop set, well, to contain this, so these are pairs of Pounce decompositions. And gamma n plus is a loop in gamma n plus, and phi n plus gamma is less than or equal to comes some constant C2, where y plus equals phi n plus, and similarly for minus replacing plus. And can arrange that this loop is also bounded at the pleated surface. So maybe I shouldn't have said so much about that, but it's not clear that these two points in titable space are in the thick part, but essentially we can assume that they are. Now, now for the rather astonishing results that Minsky proved in the 2001 paper. So this is a theorem, Minsky. Yes. No. Yes. Well, except that the this result about the existence of yn minus yn plus is only in the bounded geology case. So I guess it's the statement doesn't make. I think it's independent of the bounded. Well, so so there's this thing that so if you take gamma and gamma minus gamma prime, related by an elementary move. So this means that you have the gamma and gamma prime are two loop sets giving a pair of Pounce decomposition of a fixed surface. They are the same except for that one loop in each intersects the other just exactly twice or sorry?
Minimum. I mean, if it is this kind of
pair of cats, then it has to be two. Yes, I think you can also have one, can't you, one intersection.
Then it has the poorest bit one.
Yeah. Yeah. So right, so if you have just that, then and F and F prime have pleating loci, including gamma and gamma prime, respectively. Then, well, let's see. I think I'm going to make a statement that is not what Minsky makes, but which can be deduced from his results, and he agrees that this is true, so there's no question about this. So if the symmetric difference between gamma and gamma prime, so this is the loops on which they differ, includes no short loop, includes no loop of length less than or equal to length. So this is just two loops. Then the titable distance between F and F prime is less than or equal to a constant, depends on epsilon, but that's all. On the type of the surface, but nothing more. So this is rather astonishing, I think. It doesn't rely on any information about the length of these loops, the geodesic lengths of these loops. And it doesn't depend on the geometry of these are maps into some fixed hyperbolic manifold. They're into the maps into the same hyperbolic manifold. Doesn't depend on anything to do with the geometry of the manifold. Oh, except it does include injective on pi 1, F and F prime injective on pi 1. Now, actually, I claim that this result can be quantitatively modified. So to deal with the incompressible boundary case of ELC. This is a hypothesis. It's an important hypothesis, but I claim that you can replace it by nothing. So that's important. It's not true if you allow one of these loops to be short. So what happens if one of the loops is short is that, well, I'll just draw a two-dimensional picture, but this is really three dimensions, is that in Fofile you can have something like this. So you can have a pleated surface that, this is a short geodesic, and then this is the loop in gamma prime that's not in gamma, and then the loop that's in gamma, that is not in gamma prime, is over here. And that's part of the pleating locus for this one. And that can't go into the Margulis tube very far. It certainly can't if it's bounded. It might go in quite a way if it's a long loop. But you can't expect it to go right up to here. So you're bound to have this long bit where this surface comes away from it. Now what I claim is that if you delete this hypothesis and delete this, you can still obtain this result when for thin modifications. G of F and G prime of F prime. I don't want to say exactly what a thin modification is, but it's a point in Teichmuller space. And what you have to do is you have to get rid of this bit on this surface. So it's a thin modification. It's a modification of the SA F prime related to the annulus around a short loop that is in the pleating locus of this. Right. Okay, can I finish? May I finish the bounded geometry case of the proof? Okay, so, thank you. There are several things to say about it. So first of all, it's got by taking the conformal structure on the pleated for the Riemann surface or the hyperbolic surface with I'd say the Teichmuller space F prime. So F prime gives a point in Teichmuller space. That's a Riemann surface, which includes a Riemann surface. Now a Riemann surface has a conformal structure. So we want to cut out. Now it depends on F. So that's another important thing. So the thin modification that you take depends on the other point that you're looking at in the pair. And so what you want to do is to cut out the annulus that is far from the corresponding annulus on F. We'll assume that this loop is not short, so that there is nothing to cut out here. Cut it out, and in Teichmuller space, so that gives you a conformal structure except on a complement of an annulus. In Teichmuller space, replace that annulus by something else. Now, it's clear that this depends on the other surface in the pair. So my claim is that it's possible to do this because when you look at I will have a whole sequence of pleated surfaces. It's possible to do this, I claim, because in the pleating loci that I'm looking at come from points in time or space that are bounded distance apart. So my claim is that although the thin modification is defined with respect to a pairing between two elements of time or space, in fact, up to bounded distance, it's the same for the pair, for the pairing on the other side, and so that it's possible to get bound on distance.
So you're putting this non-cube in one of the cells?
Yeah, well, in fact, in both, if they both land. Yeah, you know, it's possible. Yeah.
So is it sort of uniform negative gravity good link, or what is it exactly? I mean, how do you uniformize? How do you get some sort of constant? I mean, how much is this independent of a given day?
Completely.
Okay, so how do you find that? I mean,
well, the same way as Minsky does it for. So he doesn't actually state this. What he actually states. But it's equivalent to it. What he states is that there is a bounded homotopy between F and F prime, which are maps from S to N. And, it uses all sorts of... It uses essentially...
So epsilon 0 thin parts cut out and then...
Not necessarily the whole of the thin parts. It might be just part of it. It depends how far in this leaf goes. So, also, this, by the way, needs to be improved in some cases. If you have a whole sequence of thin modifications of pleating loci where you're alternatively putting in a short loop and taking it out again, they're putting in something transversely and then putting back the short loop again and keeping on doing that, you need a better bound on this. But anyway, it's possible to do this. So why did I introduce these pleated surfaces, or thin modifications of pleated surfaces? Because I wanted to produce a Lipschitz map from the model into the actual hyperbolic manifold. And what we have in this hyperbolic manifold, well, we've got far out, we've got two pleated surfaces. And so we've got gamma n plus or minus the pleating loci of Fn plus or minus, which are pleated surfaces. Now, so the next thing to do is to put in... So this is something that you can do if you've got two points in time or space with pleating loci like this. You can put in loop sets gamma ni. I suppose for naught less than or equal to I less than or equal to MN. So with gamma N naught equal gamma N minus gamma N MN equal to gamma N plus, gamma N I and gamma N I plus 1 related by an elementary move. And then you can choose the number so that m of n is less than or equal to a constant, C3. Times the distance between, the distance between y n minus and y n plus. So y n minus y n plus. So choose in this points y t sub I suppose, where t I minus t I plus 1 is less than or equal to c 4, and y t I equals phi t I with phi t I gamma n I less than or equal to c 5. So you can do this. My claim is that if you have two points in time-color space, then and you take a loop set which is bounded, well, these are points, we're now in the thick part of Tychonoff space, otherwise we'd have to do something slightly different. So we can choose pairs of trans decompositions such that these are bounded at each of the ends, and then we can find a sequence of such loop sets, each pair related by an elementary move, a corresponding point in on the Tychonoff geodesic between them, where those loops are bounded. So we can loop sets are bounded. So we can do this, and then the Tychonoff map should map S cross Ti should map to F I S, where Fi has fleeting locus gamma ni. Okay, so this is a map. This is a map which sends a surface in this model manifold across it to a pleated, the image of a pleated surface. So this is a map. Now, it's not clear that this is a Lipschitz map. You can always find a pleated surface if you take a pleating locus, which is a pair of Pounce decomposition. You can find a pleated surface with that pleating locus. Well, I'm taking loop sets that are pairs of Pounce decompositions. Now you have to add in other loops, spiraling round the loops to triangulate the surface. Minsky's result says that any two will actually be boundedly the same up to the same surface up to bounded distance, because they actually have the they're not related by an elementary moving, they just have the same pairs of Pounce decompositions, so they actually Mrs. Results actually says they are bounded distance apart. And there's a homotopy class too. There's a homotopy class which I guess I haven't made clear. So the homotopy class of this map is fixed. So now, why? So this needs to be a Lipschitz map. In fact, it needs to be by Lipschitz. But first of all, it needs to be Lipschitz. Now, what Minsky's result says is that the vertical distance, I'm taking the vertical distance between Ti and Ti plus 1 to be bounded, the vertical, so the distance between, the homotopy distance between the two pleated surfaces is bounded. But we also need that the pleating loci are bounded in the hyperbolic manifold. So that's the important thing. We need that. So how do we get that? Well, what we need is some sort of what we have is that the distance between Fi and Fj in Tychonoff space is less than or equal to a constant times I minus j. Now this means that what we've got is so we can regard this as a path in Tychonoff space essentially, this is some sort of quasi-geodesic property. And so we want to use this. What I want to do now is just illustrate something that is true in Tychonoff space, which is a property of hyperbolic space. Now, in hyperbolic space we have thin triangles. So if you have three points in I'm going to tell you what's true in Tychonoff space, and it's analogous to a property in hyperbolic space. Now I've just drawn the thin triangle, and I know that's not allowed in Tychonoff space. However, this type on the geodesic is contained in the thick part of triangular space. Now, and I'm taking any other point in triangular space, and I want to take any point on this thick geodesic, this geodesic through the thick part of triangular space, then my claim is that we can find a point on either this geodesic or this geodesic, such that the distance is bounded. Now, this is part of a result that I proved about Teichmuller geodesics in work that was related to complex dynamics. I think this is almost certainly contained in Minsky's papers as well. He certainly proved that that if you have a geodesic in the thick part of Teichmuller space and you take a quasi-geodesic with the same endpoints, then it is a bounded distance from that. And it probably includes this statement, but anyway, this is what I'm using. So this is part of a more general result that I have, but this is all we need for the moment. And now, so this means that... Yeah, I think triangular space is much maligned. It's a lot more like, so there's a more general statement, which I haven't got time to give, but anyway. So this means that you can do something like define, I think of it as an orthogonal projection of triangular space onto a thick geodesic. So if you take any point, so take this Y2, now that means that you can use it to decompose this geodesic into two bits. One bit which is a bounded distance from this geodesic and the other which is a bounded distance from this geodesic. This point here you can regard as the orthogonal projection of this point in triangular space. So that means that if you've got a general path between two points in triangular space, you can break up the geodesic into bounded bits, bounded but not too short, so that if you take so here's a path where the distance between successive points is bounded. This means that the orthogonal projections will come within a bounded distance of each point. So if I take these points down here, these are far enough apart, there must be at least one thing up here which has orthogonal projection here, and that means that you have that decomposition for that point. Then for this one, there must be another one. So this comes down like that. This comes like that. That means that if you look at the distance from this point to this point, it is greater than or equal to the distance between these two, plus, basically, the distance between these two. Now, this means that the total, if there are points on this path which are far away from this, then what you can do is you can then show, so suppose there is some first time when you go, maybe the path comes like this, so you've got two points that are a bounded distance away and then it goes away. If that happens, what you can show is that the distance between here and here is much longer than the distance between here and here. Now, for my particular path, that's not true. The distance... So this means that that path that was constructed combinatorially between two points, between the two pleated surfaces, the points in triangular space, that path which was constructed combinatorially has, in fact, to be a bounded distance from the Teichmuller geodesic. That means that the pleating loci are bounded. And, right, so that's one thing. Then, not only are the pleating loci bounded, one then has to show that they are not too short. And that is done by using the fact that, if you have a geodesic in the thick part of Teichmuller space, the pleating loci actually do not stay constant you don't have the same loop staying in the pleating locus for a long time. You move off it pretty soon. This means that, and there's a bounded homotopy distance between any of these successive paths. This means that the homotopy between two pleating surfaces in this path can only enter the thin part, so the loops in the pleating locus of both of them. But no loop stays in the pleating locus for a very long time. Therefore, there are only a bounded number of pleating surfaces in the Margulis tube round any short loop. Therefore, there are no short loops. Therefore, we actually have bounded geometry for the hyperbolic manifold. Right. So that then produces a Lipschitz map. Then to get by Lipschitz in the bounded geometry case is actually, it's an easy argument, I would say, using, it's a compactness argument. It does use injectivity on pi 1. You can, although I claim that the argument can be slightly simplified, and actually I've seen other people do that. Yeah, you essentially you can. Now, okay, so general case, obviously, I'm 20 minutes over, so I better. So I think I better leave that. So the general case, basically, anything involving surfaces is an induction argument, probably. So what it uses, my approach to this is to use very strongly the bounded geometry argument. Now, why is that possible? It's possible because there is what I call a so if you have S cross Y minus Y plus in general. So if you have a surface and a type model geodesic in general, then there is this a decomposition of this product space into pieces SI cross LI, you might as well call them. And where into pieces of two types, which I call long, thick, and dominant. Now, what this means is that basically, if you restrict to this subsurface, you've got a combinatorial bounded geometry on this part of the geodesic on that. And this is long. This is sufficiently long. You go through a new thick part of Teichmuller space for a length which is long enough given nu. And so it's rather a complicated condition, obviously. It's not that complicated, but I can't say it in 10 seconds. And so these bits are bits on which you can do the sort of arguments that you can do in the bounded geometry case. The quadratic differential laminations satisfy the condition one that I gave. And you can prove a thin triangle result on these coordinates. But then the important thing is that if you then take these bits out, what is left is pieces of bounded geometry. And it's what I call a vertically efficient decomposition. So you have this decomposition into long, thick, and dominant bits on which you can do the sort of arguments that I was doing here. And then bits that are bounded geometry, and they're not stacked one above the other. If they were just stacked one above the other, 10,000 of them, that would not be good. So there is this decomposition into bits. The geometric model can be built using this, and the theory of the Teichmuller geodesic theory that is used is based on this decomposition. So this is a different approach to the Minsky approach, and also to the Bowditch Fuchs, which both of which use the curve complex theory, which was largely developed by Minsky and Mazur. But anyway, so thank you. I'm afraid I'm 25 minutes over, so I better. I think it is very striking when you look at the proofs. Yes, there's very little hyperbolic geometry in them. I think that's true.
What is the input?
What is the input? Well, I would say one thing that is very important is there's some very basic things that are important. One thing is Bonnehon's estimate, which is very quick to prove, very important, which is that if you take a pleated surfaces have bounded diameter, basically. Outside the thin part, pleated surfaces have bounded diameter. This result of Minsky that I related is certainly hyperbolic geometry. This result, I mean, I didn't actually... I maybe stated it so that there was less hyperbolic geometry than in the original statement, because the original statement was about homotopy between in the hyperbolic manifold. Well, what do you need to know about the thin thick decomposition? You need to know Margulis decomposition, right? These tubes exist, and that geodesics of bounded closed bounded geodesics don't intersect them. What else do you need to know? I mean, there's a long history behind this result of Minsky, which there's a result called uniform injectivity, which says that if you have so the original assumption, which I claim can be weakened if you weaken the conclusion. If you have a pleated surface injective on pi 1, then it is not too scrumpled up. I think the important thing about it is that if you have a pleated surface, I think this is the most important property, but it's not the only property in the statement of uniform injectivity. If you have a pleated surface and you have two long geodesics on it, now these are geodesics both in the surface and in the hyperbolic manifold, and those are close for a long time. In the hyperbolic manifold N, then they're also close in the surface. So that's an important property. What else? I don't know. There are other things, but I think it is striking. If you look at Minsky's proof, it's all curve complex. Well, he does, but of course, remember that it's built on previous papers. I don't think he ever actually proves uniform injectivity. He refers to work of Brock and Thurston. It's in Thurston's paper, yes. It's in Thurston's paper. It's proven in Thurston's paper. And by the way, yes, I mean, that's an important point, that you don't have to prove it that way.
No.
Another important point that when it comes to quantitative versions. Yeah.
So when you don't have the sort of standard geometry, then the original model you gave, which was just based on time and density by itself, doesn't work. You
no.
Have to do these modifications in this case.
What you have to do is you have to, first of all, it's actually quite simple. What you do is you break the topological product up into product bits. So you have it broken up into bits, and each of these, so you remember, so I had S goes to ST. So now each of these, so corresponding to this decomposition, if you have, I actually call it alpha I, a subsurface. So you have alpha I contained in S. Now, when you map this over to ST, the decomposition is such that the boundary of this subsurface is going to be consist of bounded loops along. For T in some sub geodesic of the toll geodesic, these in ST the phi T alpha is going to be of bounded length. So then what you do is you take out Boozer collars, as I think they're called. Round these and look at the pre-image in this, and on this you put, so then you have a set on which you put a product metric. Well, it's a twisted product metric as I did before. So you do exactly that if you have a long thickened dominant part. You just take the product metric that I took before. If you have a bounded a complementary piece, which is in fact it has some sort of bounded geometry, that bounds, but bounds nonetheless, then you scale the vertical component, the length, just to be of length 1, or something like that. No matter how long in the actual type of the geodesic, you scale it to be about 1. Now, what you're left with then is, you're left with solid tori. You're left with a collection of solid tori with boundary. On the boundary, metrics have already been put because I've put a metric on the exterior, and so the on this subsurface I've got an induced metric, which is in fact boundedly Lipschitz equivalent to a Euclidean metric on a torus. Now, if you have a Margulis tube, then its total geometry is determined by the, it is completely determined by the geometry, the metric on the boundary. It's completely determined by the metric on the boundary. So all you do is you then transfer the corresponding, you regard that as a Margulis tube with that metric on the boundary, and you just transfer the metric in. And this means that, so when I first proposed this model to Minsky, he thought it couldn't be right because Kasra Rafi, who was then completing his thesis, had examples where the length of the geometry on the Margulis tubes was different from what you might expect from straightforward translation from the Titanol and geodesic. But this model is consistent with Rafi's example.